So I met herders in Mongolia who used to spend time and money traveling to the city to pay their bills, and now, thanks to mobile payments, do that from the comfort of their yurt.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Vox Dev has just launched its Vox Dev Lit on mobile money. Vox Dev Lit is regularly updated. It brings together a lot of the academic research. You can think of it as a sort of half literature review, half wiki. The idea is to make it easy for you to access the most up-to-date resources on what we know about this topic, what we don't know, how it's used, and what potential there is for it. And one of the editors is Leora Clapper. She is lead economist in the finance and private sector research team of the Development Research Group at the World Bank, and her list of research publications on the topic of financial inclusion, well, it's nearly as long as her job title. Leora joins me today. Welcome.
Hi, Tim.
Leora, big question first of all then. Why does financial inclusion matter?
So let me start with definitions. We identify an unbanked, financially excluded person as someone who doesn't have a bank or mobile money account. Being unbanked overlaps with other forms of inequality. So women, poor people are more likely not to have accounts, for example. So if you're unbanked or unable to use your account because the bank is too far away or small transactions are too expensive, we don't trust the bank to keep your money safe, it's much harder to save money for the future or handle financial emergencies or invest in business or educational opportunities. You can do those things using cash, but it's much more difficult. And there's a growing body of research suggesting a wide range of potential development benefits from financial inclusion. For example, studies have found that digital payments can help women escape poverty, get better jobs, and strengthen their role in household bargaining, decision making. And formal financial services can also help people accumulate savings and increase spending on necessities. Mobile money also lets people quickly and easily collect money from a wider, both geographic and social network of friends and relatives during an emergency, which helps them manage unexpected expenses and stops them from sliding into poverty. Digital payments can also help people save time and money. I interviewed a woman in India last summer who paid 50 rupees to take a minibus to the city to pay a 300 rupee electric bill. And so digital solutions can disproportionately help rural and poor adults.
This is all about digital technologies like mobile money. Why do they make it so much easier?
So with the rise of mobile phones and smartphones, we're seeing a growing emphasis on achieving inclusive access to financial services through fintechs. And that includes both mobile money service products, as well as phone-based app products. So now people can get banking services without leaving their home. A lot of people in poor countries were excluded from using formal financial products because it was time-consuming and costly to travel to the city to access banking services. This was even harder for women who often have more family responsibilities. And it might be social norms making it more difficult for her to travel alone. Increasingly, every village in sub-Saharan Africa, for example, has a mobile money agent who sells phone minutes and increasingly provides access to financial services. And so digital technology is really already driving higher access and usage to financial services. Mobile money accounts have powered progress in sub-Saharan Africa over repeated global FinDex waves. And the technology has spread from East Africa to West Africa and beyond, increasing the share of adults who use digital payments in addition to having an account.
And it sounds like wherever we are in the world, these technologies are benefiting the most poor people in society and also women the most.
Yeah. So cash is really easy to give away. It's easy to steal. And it's hard to save. Evidence suggests that digital payments, by contrast, can strengthen women's financial control and improve their labor force participation. And so if you want to fix global poverty, you need to help poor people manage their money. And digital financial services are proving to be one of the best ways to help poor adults escape poverty. Because poor adults do have money, at least a little. It's just that their finances tend to be unstable, unpredictable, and hard to manage. Mm-hmm. It's not like they wake up every morning and go to their 9-to-5 job. So if you're a farmer, for example, you might only get paid twice a year. And the amount of money you earn depends on tons of factors beyond your control, the weather, the whims of the market, and so on. And you need to make that money stretch a really long time between harvests and pay daily for food, monthly school fees, and fertilizers and seeds for the next harvest. And paying women directly into an account gives her greater privacy, security, and control over her money. And we're also seeing a surge in digital payments during COVID as a way for everyone to benefit by avoiding the sanitary concerns of handing out cash. Small merchants are rapidly pivoting to e-commerce during lockdowns. Plus, we're seeing a surge in digital wage payments to prevent people lining up to collect cash payments, which is the type of thing we're trying to avoid in this era of physical distancing. In Bangladesh, for example, millions more garment factories are receiving payments into a mobile money account.
So I want to have a look at some of the work that you've done on this. You've put an extraordinary amount of effort into quantifying and measuring some of these things that we're talking about here. Now, you're one of the founders of the Global Findex database, and that measures how people save and borrow and make payments and manage risk all over the world. It's a huge effort to bring all this information together. So why is it so important to do that?
So every 3 years, we survey over 150,000 adults in about 145 countries in collaboration with the Gallup World Poll. And so this Findex questionnaire has a focus on digital payments, such as how people use their phones and the internet to purchase things in store and online, receive wages and government payments, and pay their bills. And we were motivated to start collecting this data after the IMF started collecting supply-side data directly from regulators on how many bank accounts had ever been opened in, say, Turkey. But this was a black box of data. We didn't know how many wealthy adults had accounts as compared to poorer adults. And we certainly didn't know that men in Turkey, for example, were almost 30 percentage points more likely than women to have an account. And so what's really special about the Findex data is that it's nationally representative on the individual level. So we can splice and dice the data by all sorts of individual characteristics, like gender, age, income, rural residence, and labor force participation. And this data is used by researchers, policymakers to benchmark their country's progress and relative to their neighborhood and track progress over time. Governments use these numbers to inform policy, like how many poor adults receive cash wages or government transfer payments, or how women use credit as compared to men. And so we spend a lot of time helping governments make sense of the data, identify areas for progress, and think about how technology can improve the financial landscape.
So give me some headline statistics from this about the number of people that are banked now or have a mobile money account. How extensive is the change that we've seen over the last decade?
We have three waves of data. Mm-hmm. And the latest Findex data from 2017 shows a rapid growth in basic account ownership. An additional 1.2 billion adults have opened an account at a bank or other financial institution or with a mobile money provider since 2011. Mm-hmm. And in 2017, nearly 70% of all adults had an account. Part of this growth was driven by mobile money, which is used by 1 in 5 adults in sub-Saharan Africa. And mobile money has spread from Kenya and East Africa to West Africa and beyond. And plays an especially important part in some fragile and conflict-affected economies. We've also seen a surge in the use of accounts to make or receive a digital payment, defined as the use of a card or phone to make a payment from an account, the use of an account to send or receive remittances, receive wages, agricultural or government payments, or to pay a utility bill. In 2017, about half of all adults sent or received money digitally from their account. But there's a big caveat to this global progress. Women in developing countries are still 9 percentage points less likely than men to have an account.
Whoa.
And number hasn't improved. It's even worse in some places. In Pakistan, for example, men are 5 times as likely as women to have an account.
And as people gain access to banking or mobile money, do you know much about how they are benefiting from this in their daily lives?
Yeah. So since launching the Findex study, I've spent a lot of time traveling the world, talking to people, piloting the questionnaire about how digital financial services impact their lives. So I met herders in Mongolia who used to spend time and money traveling to the city to pay their bills. And now, thanks to mobile payments, do that from the comfort of their yurt. So digital solutions can disproportionately help rural and poor adults. The fintech can also save unbanked people money. For example, I'm studying the benefits from digital remittance payments sent by low-income workers in Korea to other countries in developing Asia. Mobile phones are typically by far the cheapest way to send remittances, and the speed of digital payments can save people time. Plus, with fintech, you can pay from home. That means that low-income workers can make the payment in their home, in their evenings or over the weekend, rather than garnish wages, miss work to stand online during bank hours. And digital payments is more than a convenience. This added flexibility of using a fintech to send remittances also makes it easier for people to optimize their exchange rate. But I do need to mention some potential pitfalls. Mobile phones can be a tool for delivering affordable financial services to the poor, or they can also be a tool for defrauding the poor. The difference between the two has a lot to do with consumer protection. Recent World Bank research on digital credit suggests that weak oversight has allowed companies to push predatory loans through mobile phones, leading to widespread default and indebtedness. Policymakers need to make sure that regulations keep pace with digital innovation to ensure things like that don't happen. Otherwise, people will distrust digital financial services, and these development opportunities will be lost.
We've spoken about this so far as how it impacts the individual. But of course, on the other side of that, then clearly this offers opportunities to policymakers. And that is of interest to organizations like the World Bank. What sort of policy innovations does this make possible?
Well, for one, moving government payments from cash into accounts is a proven way to save money for the government, cut corruption, while expanding financial inclusion. So in Thailand, a country that's reached the last mile in getting people accounts, over 80% of adults are banked. Nearly 1 in 5 banked adults open their first account to receive digital payments from the government, either government transfer payment, their wage, or pension. And that number's in the neighborhood of about 30% or more in former Soviet Union countries like Georgia, Uzbekistan, and Kazakhstan. And during COVID, FinTech has really come to the agenda because policymakers' first concern has been to get financial aid to those who need it. And so many governments are using digital channels for the quickest, most efficient COVID-19 relief payments.
I was really interested to see that you've got a recent paper out. It's Learning to Navigate a New Financial Technology. And you performed an experiment in this. You introduced workers in Bangladesh to digital money for the first time. What were you investigating here?
So together with Emily Breza and Martin Kanz, we designed a study to measure the impact of moving from cash to digital wage payments. We partnered with 2 garment factories in Bangladesh and split workers, most of them women, into groups. We had 1 group of workers who received a financial institution or mobile money account, as well as direct wage deposits. We had a 2nd group where workers got accounts but were not enrolled in digital payroll. And a 3rd, a control group who received payments in cash. Our results pointed to a range of benefits from digital wage payments. By the time the study concluded, workers who got paid directly into an account saw their total savings balances double, and the formal savings balances grow by more than 50 percentage points. So compared to workers in the account-only group, these workers are 24 percentage points more likely to make a send money transaction and 60 percentage points more likely to make a withdrawal from their account without receiving assistance. And this suggests that the experience of receiving digital wage payments helped these workers build their financial capability. And so just really what motivated our study was this question, is digital payments anything more than a convenience? And so we show very much the welfare benefits of being paid directly into an account as a compared to cash.
And the potential of these types of innovation are sometimes overstated, particularly by the innovators themselves, because the first people who learn how to adopt any technology anywhere in the world tend to be the people who find it easiest or they've got the biggest incentive to do it. Is the idea with this study then to remove that bias and to randomize this so we can really can find out how easy these technologies are to adopt?
Exactly. And importantly, our field experiment includes both the control group, who continues to be paid in cash, but also 1 group who receives an account and a treatment group who receives an account and digital wage payments. And so this allows us to disentangle the effect on workers simply becoming banked of getting an account as compared to the added benefit of digital payroll.
First-time users, how easy was it for them to accept the technology in your experiment?
So that's an important question. So all workers in our experiment received training on how to use their accounts. In addition, we worked with our partner bank to install an ATM on the factory premises, and there were bank representatives at the factory on payday to answer questions. We also encouraged a mobile money agent to be present at the factory on payday to provide cash out services to workers. And we took these steps to ensure that workers had access to the money that they needed on payday, which helped build workers' trust in the product.
Now, you talked a lot about the benefits that there were to the people in the study, but are there bigger benefits to society that we could observe from this experiment?
Yes. So we added an audit study where we sent actors posing as factory workers to conduct mobile money transactions with local agents. And we find that agents operating around factories that pay electronic wages are less likely to take advantage of women customers, such as adding on extra fees, which benefits the whole community. In other words, women who receive electronic payments, wage payments, become more savvier financial customers.
I see. So these agents, they're basically taking a commission to do mobile transactions, yes?
Yeah, exactly.
Globally, we see that financial technologies are mobile money. They're very unevenly distributed at the moment. But what do we know? What don't we know about how to improve adoption where there's been low take-up so far?
So about 80% of adults in developing countries tell us they have a mobile phone. So that's amazing. 80% of adults can call, text, send and receive money via their own mobile phone. But men are still 10 percentage points more likely than women to report having their own phone. In India, men are about 20 percentage points more likely than women to have their own phone. The same as in Egypt and Ethiopia. In Pakistan, men are 40 percentage points more likely than women to have their own phone. So the question is why? And we're not really sure. If the family has limited money, maybe only the husband buys a phone. You know, when I grew up, the phone had a curly cord and hung on the kitchen wall. And now it's in the man's back pocket. Or other family members may not have access to it. You know, or maybe women are uncomfortable giving their phone numbers to a strange man who's a local mobile money agent. We should be collecting better data on the number of women agents, of female merchant agents, and a better understanding of how to narrow the digital divide. As we increasingly see the potential of leveraging technology to deliver financial services, we need to make sure that women aren't being left behind at the starting gate.
And to make sure that this happens, is there a policy that could be universally adopted, or does it depend very much on where you are?
So unfortunately, there's no silver bullet for fintech adoption. But a major hurdle is that unbanked adults frequently lack the basic tools they need to get financial services. I mentioned the importance of digital inclusion and getting affordable phones and internet data to women, poor, and rural adults. Another critical requirement is universal digital ID. In the poorest countries, only 62% of adults have a government-issued identification, and the gap between men and women is 15 percentage points. Interestingly, in our 2017 fintech survey, we asked ID holders how they use their ID. And the number one reason was access to mobile services, followed by financial services. On the regulatory side, interoperability between mobile money service providers is good for all users of financial services, but again, might be especially advantageous for women, since they're typically less likely than men to have multiple phones and SIM cards that would support sending and receiving funds via separate payment systems that are not interoperable. Interoperability between mobile money and bank accounts could make saving accounts more accessible to poor and rural adults. For example, I'm studying a product in Ghana that allows mobile money account users to sweep their money into a bank account, which can earn interest and help build a credit history. So data privacy and consumer protection will also no doubtedly remain major issues. People will not use their accounts unless they can trust the financial system. And now, during COVID, following the surge in digital government transfer and wage payments, is an unprecedented moment for governments to introduce policies that can help people develop that trust and then keep them in the system to build their financial capability once this immediate crisis has passed.
There's a lot going on, isn't there, Leora, to say the least. But thanks very much for guiding us around it today.
Thank you, Tim.
The two examples of Leora's work that we were talking about, we recommend both of those, both published by the World Bank. So we've got the Policy Research Working Paper 9495, and that is the Learning to Navigate a New Financial Technology, Evidence from Payroll Accounts, and authors Emily Brisa, Martin Kanz, and Leora Clapper, and the latest version of that, December 2020. There is also, of course, the Global Findex database measuring financial inclusion around the world. All the data in it is publicly available. And of course, don't forget to check out the mobile money Vox Dev Lit, which Leora helps to edit in all the spare time she obviously must have. Thank you very much, Leora. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. We're on all the popular platforms, and our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org.